You're listening to the Customer Success Career Coach. If you like money, and if you want to reach your highest earning potential in your customer success career, then stay tuned. Hi, I'm Carly Agar, and after 10 years of building my own career in the field, I'm now an award-winning career coach for current and aspiring customer success pros. And this is the first customer success podcast that gives you easy-to-apply strategies and tips to help you score your dream job, secure your next big promotion, or become the top performer on your team. Think of this podcast as your weekly dose of career growth hacks to not only explore what's possible for you in your career, but help you decide where you want to go. And of course, give you all the steps to get there. Welcome to the Customer Success Career Coach Podcast. Welcome back to another episode of the Customer Success Career Coach. If you are just joining me for the first time, thank you so much for tuning in. And if this is not your first episode and you're coming back every single week, thank you so much for being here and for giving me your precious, precious time. So something you might not know about me is in my journey to starting my own business, I had to do, and honestly still do, a lot of self-work, a lot of work on my mindset, on limiting beliefs I held, on things that were holding me back or just getting in my way. For context, for anyone listening, and you might hear this and think, you're lying, there's no way. It took me, I want to say about 7 or 8 months to write my first LinkedIn post. So from the time that I decided I want to start creating content to help people in customer success, and the time I actually worked up the bravery, I'll say, to keep it PG, to post on LinkedIn, it was over half of a year. So there was a lot of work on my mindset, clearly, that I needed to do in order to feel okay with being seen and being heard and feeling like what I had to say was valuable enough to share. Also getting over the fear of judgment, just so many things that I had to work on. Anyway, one of the big things I learned throughout many, many, many of the mentorships I've been a part of was how to change my relationship with money. And I'm not going to get into all the details, nor will I try to teach you what I learned because I'm not an expert in money by any means. But what I will share is one thing I have learned and one thing that I find applicable to anyone who's trying to grow their career is a lot of people struggle to talk about money. And I see this with my clients all the time. I'll ask a simple question like, how much do you want to make? And I can see that they get uncomfortable. And oftentimes, if you are a client listening to this right now, you know this about me, I will call them out and say, you seem uncomfortable by that question. Why is that making you uncomfortable? We're just having a conversation. So a lot of people are uncomfortable talking about how much they earn, how much they want to earn, which leads into feeling uncomfortable negotiating, which leads into feeling uncomfortable trying to figure out how much they should be earning and what's realistic for them. And I'm not going to get into all the ways that can impact your career or impact your life when we're talking about relationship with money in a broader context, but I do want to point out that being comfortable talking about money does definitely help you earn more of it in your career. And I'm not even suggesting you need to walk around your day job talking about money all the time. In fact, that would be really weird. So please don't do that. And if you do that, don't tell anyone that Carly Agar told you to, because that's not what I'm saying. But what I am suggesting is that for a lot of us, because the topic of money itself is uncomfortable, we're just simply not in a place to make as much money as possible in our careers. Because to get to your highest earning potential, the reality is you've got to be able to talk about money. So today's episode is, again, not meant to fix your relationship with money or get into any of that at a deep level. Today's episode is meant to serve as a very light introduction into the topic of money, specifically talking about things that you can do to maximize your pay throughout your career. So what you will walk away with are, I've got a list of, I think, 7, 8, or 9 simple actions, nothing crazy, that you can start implementing like today, tomorrow. These are things that over time will get you closer to your financial goals as it relates to your career. Before I get into the good, juicy how-to stuff, I want to start by saying it's okay to be motivated by money. And I want to say this to you because it was a long time before anyone said that to me in my career. And I remember having a lot of shame around it. Like, I would be asked questions throughout my career, whether it be in interviews or talking with mentors, where they would say, "What are you motivated by?" And of course, there are things outside of money that I was and am still motivated by, like making an impact. But for the longest time, I felt like being motivated by money was a bad thing and something that I shouldn't admit. And then one day, a mentor said to me, "Carly, that's normal. Most people go to work because they need money." And I was like, "Yeah, that's true. But doesn't that make me sound like materialistic or selfish or shallow, all of these things?" And she was like, "No, Carly. Literally everyone to some degree is motivated by money. And if that's you, and if you've ever felt shame around that, there's absolutely nothing wrong with it. It doesn't mean anything about you. It doesn't make you greedy. Money is a resource, and it's okay to want more of it. It is also okay to admit that you want more of it." Now, quick disclaimer, I am by no means suggesting that in interviews, you should just scream, "I'm motivated by money," and that's all. Because there should be other things that you're motivated by. But if you are motivated by money and you've ever felt uncomfortable saying that or admitting that or feeling that way, I'm giving you permission to let that go. Okay, so now that that's out of the way, let's just get into the good how-to stuff. So what are some specific things you can do to maximize your pay throughout your customer success career? And I'm going to be giving actions that you can take at different steps throughout your career journey. So whether you're currently job searching, you are brand new to customer success, you're 10 years in, it really does not matter. These tips will apply to you. So I'm going to start with some things that you can and should do in your job. So this is targeted at those of you who are currently in customer success and you're looking for ways that you can start to maximize your pay. Number one is state your intentions early on. So if you have financial goals, if you have goals of growing your career, of moving up into a leadership position, if you have goals of moving out of customer success into something like marketing, state your intentions early and state them frequently. So what I mean by that is when your manager says something to you like, "What are your goals?" or "What are your career aspirations?" don't just give them some fluffy nonsense that you think they want to hear. Be very prescriptive. Like, "I would like to be promoted by this date. I would like to be earning this amount of money by this time." The earlier you state your intentions and the more you repeat them, the more likely you are to reach them. Number two is learn how decisions are made. And what I'm referring to here specifically is at your company, how are decisions around promotions made? How are decisions around pay raises made? So what you can do here is literally write down, okay, my goals are 1, 2, and 3. I'm going to bring those goals to my manager or to some leader at my company, and I'm going to start asking questions around what I need to do to hit these goals. What do I need to do to ensure that I can be promoted within 11 months? That is a real question you should ask. I can tell you right now, that is a question I have asked many times throughout my career. What are some things you need to see from me and leadership needs to see from me in order to justify my getting a 15% pay raise by 2025? Who's involved in these decisions? So we're having this conversation today. Who are you bringing this up to? Who's next in line? Who else is going to have a say in whether or not I get that pay raise by 2025? What does the process look like from here? What are next steps? Those are all questions that you should be asking your manager or some leader decision maker at your company. Number three is aligning yourself early on to what leadership cares about. And I've talked about this in a previous episode around promotions. The way I want you to think about it is instead of just obsessing over your KPIs, start obsessing over the things that leadership really cares about. I'm not saying they don't care about you hitting your KPIs, and I'm also not saying that you shouldn't try to hit your KPIs, but it's not always the person who hits or exceeds their KPIs that gets promoted the fastest. It's usually the person who's making the biggest impact internally, and you can't make an impact internally unless you know what leadership cares about. So, let's say that, again, you're sitting down with your manager and you want to have a conversation to figure out what are some things that I should be doing to make an impact? What is leadership talking about? What is the C-suite talking about? What are our investors talking about? When you sit down with your manager, you can ask something like, hey, can you share anything about what, let's just pretend the CCO's name is Laura. Can you share anything about what Laura sees as big opportunities for the department? What is she talking about in your one-on-ones? What is she asking the team for? Then let's pretend your manager says, oh, you know, great question. Well, Laura really cares about getting executive sponsors engaged. She keeps bringing it up, how we don't have the best engagement from executive sponsors within our paid accounts. And she's really worried about that. And I know that, you know, in Q1, she hasn't really brought it up more broadly, but it is definitely on the roadmap for Q3. There's going to be where everyone's going to be expected to double down on getting VP level and above contacts talking to us from our paid accounts. Amazing. Now you are a full quarter ahead of everyone else. Now you have all of Q2 to try to figure out how you're going to get more executive sponsors engaged within your book of business before Laura, your CCO, even announces to the department that that's a new focus area. So the steps I would take is first, I would go look at my book of business and I would measure how many of my accounts have engaged executive sponsors. Because if you can't measure it, it's kind of useless. So let's pretend you go look at your data and you come up with 50%. So you have in about 50% of your accounts, you have a contact who is a VP level or above, and they are engaged, meaning they're talking to you, they're answering emails, they're attending meetings, whatever it is. So that means you got 50% of your accounts where you don't really have an executive sponsor who's engaged. Great. Now we have our baseline. So then what I would do throughout the quarter is I'd try a bunch of things. I would try email campaigns. I'd try different messaging. I would try sending Loom videos, sending scorecards, different kinds of business reviews. Whatever I had the creative liberty to do, I would do to try to get more executive sponsors engaged within my accounts. Then, ideally, at the end of the quarter, I would go to my manager and say, hey, by the way, you know, I know that Laura is about to announce that we should be working on getting exec sponsor engagement up. I actually tested a bunch of things this quarter, and I was able to get my engagement up from about 50% to 70%. And the three things that worked really well for me are A, B, and C. Do you think it'd be helpful if I went ahead and presented these to the team? Your manager is going to be like, oh my gosh, of course, I think it would be helpful. I'm also going to invite Laura to come listen because she's going to want to hear about this. Oh, and I'm also going to invite these other five people from other departments because I know that when Laura makes her announcement, they're going to be asked to care about this as well. And now you've basically created a stage for yourself to present on how you improved a metric, how you made an impact on something that leadership cares about without them asking you to. So now you are ahead of the whole team. And if you can repeat that cycle, if you can do things like that once a year, twice a year, three times a year, you will be the one that gets promoted much faster than the person who's just crushing their KPIs and doing nothing else. Hopefully you are enjoying today's episode. Don't mind me while I jump in here with a quick interruption. One of the questions I get most often is, Carly, if I'm looking for a new job in customer success, how the heck am I supposed to compete with the hundreds of other applicants going after the same roles as me? So if you've ever asked this question, if you've ever wondered the same thing before, I teach you exactly how to break through the noise in today's crowded job market so that you get more interviews in my free training. You could have a fully optimized resume and step-by-step plan for securing more interviews in less than 2 hours. Head on over to carlyagar.com/freebies to grab the free training right now. I'll also make sure the free training is linked in today's show notes. Now let's get back to the episode. So number three was align yourself to what leadership cares about. So we just talked about three things you can start doing if you are employed. Now, there's also lots of things you can do when you are job searching to maximize your pay in the long run. So tip number four is when you are job seeking, always negotiate your offers. Now, unfortunately, if I was to talk about how to negotiate your offers in this episode, it would be way too long. So my tip is always negotiate. And the way to think about it, and this is how we approach things with my clients, is if you have never negotiated before, so maybe you're coming from a field like education where negotiating your salary is not something that happens. Or maybe you are 4, 5, 6 years into your customer success career and you just never negotiated before. If you are brand new to negotiating, have realistic expectations for yourself. What I mean by that is I don't expect you to become an expert negotiator the first time you do it. I don't expect that the first time you negotiate a job offer, you're going to get a 50% increase in OTE. That's unrealistic. So don't have that expectation for yourself. Instead, think about the journey to becoming a great negotiator in baby steps. If you've never done it before, your goal should be, I'm going to negotiate the next job offer I get. That's it. That's your only goal. If you are really afraid of negotiating on the phone, do it over email. This way, at least you get your feet wet. At least you start to expose yourself to what it feels like to ask for more money. And the more you do it, the more comfortable you'll get with it, the more experience you have with it, the better you'll get at it. Your confidence will build, your effectiveness at negotiating will build throughout your career. I've never heard of anyone asking for more money and having their offer rescinded. I know that's a huge fear. I hear that from clients all the time. They're like, I've worked so hard to get to this point. Like, the offer is in my hand. I don't want to do anything right now to get it taken away from me. As long as you are being reasonable and polite in your ask, that offer is not going to get rescinded just because you tried to negotiate. On the flip side, I have countless stories of people who have asked for more money and been very pleasantly surprised by how receptive the new employer was, or pleasantly surprised by how easy the process was, or pleasantly surprised by how much additional money they got. So if you are listening to this right now and you're thinking, I don't want to negotiate because I don't want to get this opportunity taken away from me, the likelihood of that happening is almost zero. Number five, so my fifth tip for you is a difficult one to admit, honestly. And this is something that is new given the current market. So number five, I'll give you the tip and then I'll explain it, because I think this one is going to require a bit of explanation. So number five is consider consistency in your niche or in your domain. And what I mean by that is, if you've been working in financial services, consider that staying in financial services could mean good, happy things for your wallet. It could mean that you maximize your pay more quickly than if you were to leave financial services. Same thing if you're coming from marketing, consider sticking within marketing. Same thing if you have worked in the human resources domain, consider sticking with it. Now for the explanation. A really interesting thing that is happening in customer success right now is it is becoming more specialized. And I'm going to do my best to explain why with as few words as possible, because I could go down a long tangent. So for a very, very long time, there has been a debate about what makes the best customer success manager. Is it someone who has experience in the domain, or is it someone who has customer success experience? If I work at an HR tech company and I'm hiring a CSM, basically this debate is, am I better off hiring someone who's a human resources expert and teaching them how to be an effective CSM? Or am I better off hiring someone with extensive customer success experience, regardless of the domain they're coming from? So someone who's really good at renewing accounts, expanding accounts, driving adoption, but maybe knows next to nothing about human resources. This is a debate that has been going on forever, and it's still going on today. But what's happened is, because of layoffs and because of the growing desire for remote work and because of the increased competition for customer success jobs, what's happened is employers now are in a position to hire people who have extensive customer success experience and have domain experience. I don't think that customer success will ever become 100% specialized. And this also does not mean that you can't land a job if you don't stay in your domain. It does not mean that you can't land a job if you don't have customer success experience. I have clients doing this every day to negate those theories. Going back to the tip, which is consider staying within your niche or domain. What we are starting to see is, if you continue your career in a specific niche or in a specific domain. You continue to basically rack up some credibility, or you continue to add on years of experience in a specific sector, you will likely be paid at a higher level than other folks who are jumping from niche to niche to niche. So it's just something to consider. Now, another way to think about consistency in your career, it doesn't necessarily mean that if you start in HR, you can never leave HR. There are other ways to create consistency in your career to help maximize your pay. The first one is consistency in the customer success maturity of a team or organization. What do I mean by that? What I mean is, if you have worked at startups, consider staying in startups. Because if you come to the table as a job candidate and you have gone through Series A to Series C customer success 3 times, but you don't have experience in the domain, you might be paid more than someone who does have domain experience because you've gone through that CS maturity cycle many times. So again, another way to think about consistency is in the maturity of the organization or the department. So staying within startups, seeing a customer success department through Series A to Series C multiple times can essentially position you as an expert in that phase of growth for a CS team and can help you land higher paying roles. Another way to think about consistency is it's a little bit more broad than staying within the same niche. So what I mean by that is, let's continue to use our HR example. So let's say that you've worked in HR for a long time, primarily in solutions that provide data to human resources teams. One way that you could find consistency in your career is by sticking with data, but not necessarily for human resources teams. So maybe you move from one solution that provides data to HR teams to another solution that provides data for product teams, to another solution that provides data for, I don't know, marketing teams. That is another way to create consistency in your career, to rack up those credibility points in order to maximize your pay in the long run. Because now you are an expert in everything that comes along with data as a CSM. So you're an expert in how to deploy data, the challenges that people have around adopting data, the processes that exist around data in organizations, and all of those things, all of that knowledge that you have is going to serve you very well in your new role in data for marketing. So I know this one's a little bit more tricky. I'm just going to recap it one more time. If you can create some sort of consistency throughout your career, you will likely be paid more than your colleagues who do not have any consistency in their careers. And that is because it positions you as an expert with specialized information, specialized credibility in a certain thing. Now, that could mean that you stick with a niche or vertical, whatever you want to call it, forever. So maybe you live and die by human resources. Maybe you stick with a certain maturity, like sticking with startups who are in hypergrowth. You see that startup through, then you leave and go to another startup. That's consistency. And then another is sticking with the solution or the problems that you're solving. So maybe you're not in human resources forever, but you are sticking with data. And that could be data for HR, and then data for product, and then data for marketing. Alrighty. Tip number 6. Again, we're talking about specifically things that you can do in your job search to maximize your pay. Number six is learn how to become an expert at interviewing. What I mean by expert is you've got to know how to tell stories. If you don't think that your storytelling is good, it probably isn't. If you're not good at storytelling, your interviews will fall flat. You will miss out on job offers, but you will also be less likely to have a successful negotiation if you are offered a job. You have to get really, really good at selling yourself. This is something that everyone struggles with, except for maybe 0.01% of the population. Those are the people who walk around naturally in a state of just bragging about themselves. They don't usually struggle with this, but most people struggle to sell themselves. The better you get at selling yourself, the more job offers you'll get, and the more likely you are to have successful negotiations. Another thing that will make you an expert at interviewing is being able to talk through experience gaps that you have. So what I mean by that is if you've been in customer success for 6 years, but you've never really had to drive expansion, you've got to be able to talk about it. You have to have a really strong perspective on how you would drive expansion as a CSM, the steps you would take, the things you would look for, your general approach in order to basically compete with people who will have that direct experience. And that is going to, again, help you not only secure job offers at higher paying jobs, but help with when you get to the negotiation, you'll be way more likely to be successful in a negotiation if that other party can't turn around and say to you, well, you don't have experience driving expansion, so we're not going to accommodate your request to bump up your salary, which we don't want. Okay, number seven and number eight are going to be really short, but I do feel like they're super important, so I want to still share them. So tip number seven is consider that in order to maximize your pay in your career, wherever you are right now, you may need to leave your company, which might not sound very exciting. Looking for a job right now, not super fun. So I get it. I know that that's not the advice you want to hear, but if you're waiting for someone to tell you, hey, you've kind of reached your ceiling where you are, or by staying where you are dragging yourself down, you are holding yourself back from catapulting your career forward, from catapulting your income forward, here's your cue. You may need to leave your company, even if it causes some temporary pain and discomfort. And then number eight, again, another really short one that I just want to leave you with, is get an unbiased opinion on your current salary level. So whether that be through mentorship, through coaching, through networking, whatever it is, or even Catalyst, I think, puts out that survey every year around customer success managers' average pay. Go look at that data. Go seek out information from people who don't work at your current company and ask questions. Try to figure out what are other CSMs making? How does their experience align with yours? What do they have that you don't have? What do you have that they don't have? Just seek information, and that can be really enlightening, both in a good way and sometimes in a bad way too. Because sometimes you'll learn you are out earning everybody, and that, you know, could cause some stress because now you're going to be like, well, where do I go from here? But either way, being armed with that information about kind of where you fall on the scale for your experience level is going to give you really valuable information on how to move forward. Okay, I am going to end there. Again, my expectation is not at all that you walk away from this episode feeling like the most empowered to talk about money and feeling like you've healed your relationship with money entirely. That's not my expectation. But my hope is that you walk away feeling just a tiny bit more empowered, maybe a tiny bit curious, or even just a tiny bit inspired to do something differently in your career that will ultimately help you maximize your pay. That's it for today's episode. Thanks so much for tuning in. If you love today's episode, or if you want to continue the conversation, come hang out with me on LinkedIn. Connect with me, follow me, or message me over there. I'm at linkedin.com/in/Carly-Agar. And if you haven't already, don't forget to follow the show wherever you listen to your podcast so you don't miss any future episodes. I'll catch you next time.